In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Tuesday, April 4th, AD 2017. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch, was approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee on a party-line vote yesterday, and Republicans are getting ready to pull the nuclear option on full Senate confirmation. Only three Democrat senators have announced their willingness to back the president's candidate, and 41 Democrat senators have agreed to filibuster the nomination. Two middle school moms were not happy when they heard that their seventh grader sons were being indoctrinated in Islam at Chatham Middle School in New Jersey. The teacher instructed the students with the phrase, quote, "May God help us all find the true faith, Islam," unquote. Richard Thompson, president and chief counsel of the Thomas More Law Society, told The World View that this sort of thing is increasingly common in public schools today.
Situation is not uncommon at all. It's happening all across the country where the public school system now is becoming a pro-Islamic voice and is endorsing Islam over all the other religions. In a general way, the courts have said school districts may not endorse or appear to endorse a specific religion.
Thompson also said that Christianity would never be tolerated in public schools, noting that Islam is being taught as the only religion in these cases.
Normally that's been used when school systems have tried to put up Ten Commandments plaques on walls or school prayer or Bible reading. There appears to be a double standard when it comes to Islam.
And finally, Thompson warned that parents need to be aware of what their children are being taught.
One of the things that parents have to do is become more and more aware of what their children are learning in school. The parents cannot just look at a textbook. What is going on in many instances is the resource materials that the teachers use that are not even included in the curriculum or not presented to parents. So
the Kansas legislature was unable to override the governor's veto yesterday on a bill that would have expanded Medicaid funding in the state and provided funding for Planned Parenthood. The Kansas House of Representatives came just 3 votes short. The additional health care funding would have added $100 million to the Kansas state budget for fiscal year 2018 and 2019. Health insurance companies have pushed for these expansion bills to enable more federal subsidies for people who enroll in Obamacare. Subway is not pulling its ads from a new sitcom called The Mick, despite the Parents Television Council's encouragement to do so. The pro-family group has criticized the Fox sitcom for its celebration of almost every type of perverted sexuality. In an interview with the Christian Post, the Parents Television Council president Tim Winter said, quote, "The show itself has some of the most irresponsible content we have seen on primetime broadcast television in a long time," unquote. 10% of Americans say they love Jesus, but they do not go to church anymore, up from 7% 12 years ago. According to Barna's recent stats, 31% of Americans are practicing Christians, attending church at least once a month, although 73% of Americans still call themselves Christians. But Jesus said, "On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and do many mighty works in your name?' And then will I declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" Matthew 7, 22-23. Australia continues to liberalize its abortion laws. The Northern Territory has now legalized abortion. Given that the new law will go into effect in July, the district government will allow RU 486 abortions and surgical abortions in specialized clinics up to 24 weeks of gestation. Tasmania, Victoria, and Western Australia already allow abortion on demand for children who have been in utero as long as 4 to 5 months. South Australia and Queensland maintain the most restrictions on abortion. World Magazine reports on the regrets of those who have lived the transgendered life. citing statistics of suicide rates 20 times higher among transgender adults who have undergone hormone therapy and sex reassignment surgery. World interviewed Robert Wenham, who has repented of his transgender surgery. He warned others tempted to pursue this route, saying, quote, "I want to shake them and scream, you don't know what you're doing. You're giving your family up for something that's not real. But I also know how powerful that feeling is because I went through it. It's almost demonic," unquote. Then he quoted the words of Jesus from John 8:32, "The truth shall set you free." The grandfather of one of the three delinquents shot to death while breaking into a home in Oklahoma told the press that his grandson, quote, "did not need to die," unquote. He called the burglary attempt, quote, "stupid," unquote. The boys, 16, 17, and 19 years old, were all killed when the son of the homeowner shot the family's AR-15, according to Tulsa 8 News. Proverbs 1:15 through 19 says, "My son, do not walk in the way with them, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of the owners." And that's the worldview in 5 minutes on this Tuesday, April 4th, in the year of our Lord, 2017. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ. Finding it tough to spend quality time with your son? Come to the Father-Son Retreat this summer, Thursday, August 31st through Sunday, September 3rd, and experience the blessing of 4 days of solid teaching and mountain activities at one of America's most beautiful and exciting mountain lodges near Winter Park, Colorado. Register at ColoradoFatherSon.com. That's ColoradoFatherSon.com.
This edition of the Generations Radio program originally aired in 2015. For additional shows on hundreds of topics, search our archives at generations.org.
Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. It's Valentine's Day today, Steve.
Woo, yeah.
My kids are doing a banquet for the couples in the church.
Hey, we're doing this. We're doing that with the couples in our homeschool group at our house on Saturday. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Huge turnout last year.
My girls have been working on this for about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Oh, they got all kinds of decor, and they're having a good time with it.
I should come over here.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a great time. Well, it's Valentine's Day, and another point about Valentine's Day, guess what's coming out in the theaters tonight?
50 Shades of Pink.
50 Shades of Black.
Black.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Black, I think it was. In which they attempt to define love, but they forget to appeal to 1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah, love American style.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a
in
show.
In which the categories are blurred, and we did a show on that. We're not repeating it. However, it is interesting that 50 Shades has gone splat on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah. I just visited Rotten Tomatoes. I like to look at Rotten Tomatoes. It actually gives you a feel for what the audience out there, we're talking the mass audience, not Christian audience, yeah, but just the mass audience thinks about the artistic presentation of the movie. And apparently it's gone splat, at least right now, it's gone splat on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, coincidentally, and again, this is an irony that I want to bring out, there is another movie coming out called Old Fashioned.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
No.
Yeah, another movie called Old Fashioned coming out, in which, here's the line on it, okay? In which it's a love story, especially for Valentine's Day, and provides a contrast to 50 Shades of Grey. The old-fashioned movie that's coming out tonight describes a story in which two broken people come out of their dark pasts of, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey destructive patterns.
Yeah.
So they're coming out of that. So they've been there, done that.
So it's a
A really dumb, lousy, horrible, wicked T-shirt.
So it's
didn't
a sequel.
Do us any good. Yeah, it's sort of a sequel. Yeah. And they come back into real love through a traditional courtship. So I just think there's an irony there. And they make it through the whole film without fornicating.
Wow.
That's got to be a first for a romantic movie.
Yeah. So what is it, 15 minutes long?
Wow. Break out the non-alcoholic champagne.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
This is the first time.
So is this a Christian film then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At least that's what they say. It does have a PG-13 rating for depiction of partying and sort of the bad old days. So they're coming out of the bad old days, but there's a depiction of the bad old days before they get to the good old days.
All right. Well, yeah, sometimes they get a PG-13 rating because they actually mention Christ in a right way. You know, thematic problems. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not getting as much airplay.
I wonder why.
As in 1/1000th of the airplay. Yeah. Very little airplay. I picked up a little bit of it on some of the Christian movie reviews out there. But and the Christian movie reviews, a little bit not sure because of the PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched it, but I will say there's a contrast, friends, between the 50 Shades of Grey and Old Fashioned, in which two broken people come out of their dark pasts of 50 Shades of Grey. They're coming out of it. They've been there. Come out of it, and they're finding real love through a traditional courtship. Okay. So that's Valentine's Day 2015. Very interesting stuff. Now, I was at the grocery store yesterday, or the day before yesterday.
You don't have somebody else shop for you.
Going to Sprouts. You know, Sprouts.
Okay. Yeah.
Sprouts is a great store, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, it is. I like that.
I like Sprouts. And here's People Magazine right there. He's finally happy.
Obama?
No, Bruce Jenner.
Oh!
Bruce, there's the smiling face of Bruce Jenner. Not really quite looking like Bruce Jenner anymore.
How old is he now?
I don't know, 65? He's older, yeah. Bruce Jenner was the Olympian back in the... I remember him. He won the gold medal for the decathlon.
Yeah.
Big guy. He was on the Wheaties box.
Wheaties box, yeah.
But he's finally
looked happy. I thought he looked happy then.
Well, apparently he wasn't.
He had his hands up and you know, all that.
He looked happy, yeah. He looked happy when he was up there getting the gold medal.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy.
He wasn't happy.
Well, he's finally happy.
Well, what made him so happy?
He's changing his gender.
And that...
You know...
Did I hear that right?
I hate to break the bad news to Bruce, but
that's not going to make
him
happy.
It's not going to do it.
No. He won't be happy.
Nope. Not going to be happy. Bruce Jenner's not going to be happy. It's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
You know, more violation of God's laws. You know, putting on a woman's clothing is an abomination in Scripture. Yeah. And arguing from the least lesser to the greater, I don't think we want to talk about what Bruce Jenner's doing. But...
Well, that even,
I do want to say that
that even included that. I did a study just on those words, and the words in, I think it's in Deuteronomy. It said the things of a woman.
Okay,
which also
so
made
could it, include the accoutrements in other senses,
right? And so trying to take on the shape of a woman as well. So even if you're just dressing in drag or something like that, that it was included.
May I suggest to Bruce that if Bruce wants to be happy, I've got a way for that to happen.
There's a big part of Scripture talking about happy.
Let me read.
Yeah.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, there you go, Steve. Now, that's not intuitive.
Right.
That's not intuitive. It's not the first thing Bruce thinks of. The poverty of spirit.
Yeah.
Meaning, a wretched man that I am.
Knowing that you're spiritually bankrupt.
Yeah. Meaning that God have mercy on me, a sinner. Meaning, the spiritual bankruptcy. If Bruce understood that what makes him unhappy are the things that he thinks are making him happy.
Right.
If his eyes were open to see the wretchedness of his condition, his sin before God, and that he is broken. He's very broken. We're all broken because of the fall. And we are spiritually impoverished. We're a mess. We are the very height of dysfunctionality. And if his eyes were open to that and he had poverty of spirit, he would be blessed.
Yeah.
He'd be blessed. Blessed are they that mourn. If he would cry, he would be blessed.
Yeah. And the mourning. Yeah. Mourning is over your sin and recognizing how spiritually bankrupt we are and that we are sinners in the eyes of God who created us. And we need to mourn over our sinful life.
Blessed are the winners of gold medals. Oh, wait, wait.
Wait,
sorry.
Well, that was the...
That wasn't there. I'm sorry. I was reading the article flipped over the page there for a second. I'm sorry. Blessed are the meek.
Which would be the opposite of...
It'd be Yeah, it wouldn't be the guy with his hands up going, I'm the
greatest.
I'm the greatest. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, well, I just wanted to share a little bit. I don't think Bruce Jenner tunes into the show, but if he ever does, or maybe he's got a friend, perhaps they should point him to Matthew 5. This pop culture is a self-destructive culture, and it doesn't present a biblical form of culture that's rooted in the Fifth Commandment and the First Commandment. Read my book, The Tattoo Jesus. If you have any contact whatsoever with pop culture, with movies, sports, popular music, if you have any contact with AM/FM radio, if you have ever turned on the television, I would encourage you to get my book, The Tattoo Jesus, just to get a feel. Now, this is not the final word on culture at all. It's my best shot, and I haven't found too many resources on this issue. If there's more resources, that'd be helpful. But it's my best shot at bringing a Christian world and life view in the area of pop culture, and we are so surrounded by it, immersed in it, that I think somebody needs to say something about it. And if you have any contact whatsoever with pop culture, and you're not critiquing it biblically, man, you better get a copy of my book, The Tattoo Jesus, and take a look at what I say about pop culture, about movies, music, etc. And if you'd like to interact with me, please do. We've had a couple of emails where people say, you could have said this different, you could have said that different. I agree. I'm going to expand the book as I go.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith.
It's not the last
word. And it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant.
And
will
there's not much out there to compete with me.
Let it
so
happen.
I would really encourage you to get a copy
should
of my
Christians
book, Tattoo
just
Jesus.
Let it
can
happen.
Afford it, just email me.
These
I'll
are important questions,
like
my
bucks.
Friends. This is Kevin
but
Swanson.
Get it at our website, Kevin
and I wrote the book on freedom because
we'll be back in just a moment
I wanted to build a case
what's
for
happening
freedom.
With the macro cultures.
A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever
women that probably are the
have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn,
together, the most
Leiden, and William the Silent, the American Pilgrims, and the Battle for King's Mountain.
Radio broadcast. Stay with me.
How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
And welcome back to the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Steve Vaughn also here in studio with me. As we analyze culture and what's happening with the Western world and Western culture, we are looking at a post-Christian world, but how did we get here? That's the question I like to bring back again and again. Why is it that it appears the largest minority segment in America that fears persecution from the majority are evangelical Christians? Why is that the case after 250 years of a country that at least gave some lip service to a Christian world and life view? What happened? What has happened to our world? Well, we have seen a breakout, a mainstreaming of paganism in our world in just the last 30 years. No, make that the last 15 years. Something really significant has happened in the mainstream in just the last 15 years. And it was accomplished by four women, a quartet of four women. And this, to me, is interesting. And I just want to share this with our listening audience. I wrote the book Apostate on what happened in the 19th century. Now we're analyzing what's going on in the 21st century as the ideas of the 19th century of people like Marquis de Sade, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Karl Marx, and others are mainstreamed throughout our society. Friends, four women with an amazing amount of influence. Now again, under the providence of God, not unlike the Nephilim prior to the flood, who had such incredible influence upon a society. They were giants. They were men of unprecedented power and influence over the masses. The same thing has happened over the last two centuries. And with the masses, it is happening right now under the influence of four women. Again, there are forces that have been working on these issues for the last several hundred years, since Jeremy Bentham and some of the guys I talk about in my book. But most everybody does not know who Jeremy Bentham was.
That's right.
Very, very important man. Extremely important. He was the godfather of John Stuart Mill. And John Stuart Mill was incredibly powerful and influential in radicalizing the 19th century. All right. But that these guys were dealing in the higher echelons. Right now, we're moving into the grassroots. We're moving it into the mainstream. And what has happened with these four women is they have been able to popularize and mainstream nihilist sexuality, cannibalism, drinking blood, homosexuality, witchcraft, and pagan gladiatorial games. That's what makes these women so interesting. They are arguably the most, if not among the most, powerful people in the world in terms of their influence upon pop culture. I speak of four women, the first of which we have mentioned on the show this week. The author of 50 Shades of Grey, E.L. James. She's 51 years of age. She actually describes herself as Twihard, and she says her books were notoriously inspired by Stephanie Meyer's vampire and drama. She has single-handedly mainstreamed bondage, S&M, and what I would call nihilist sexual activity. If you want to take sexual activity to its ultimate nihilist goal, you want to take it over the edge to nihilism, self-destructiveness. E.L. James has accomplished that. Then Stephanie Meyer, of course, is number two. Her Twilight series. And by the way, E.L. James has sold about 100 million copies of her book.
Wow.
In something like 36 countries. Well, the second author, second woman in the quartet is Stephanie Meyer. And her Twilight series has sold over 100 million copies in 37 languages. They are teen vampire of tales. One of the points that needs to be made is that this mainstreaming typically happens with your average housewife or your average teenage girl or your average teenage boy. It tends to work its way into the women and children. That may be why there are four women involved in mainstreaming these aspects of paganism.
Yeah, and these have become movies as well now.
They have. So, yeah. Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series is something like number eight in the all-time motion picture series of all time.
Yeah.
Stephanie Myers has popularized cannibalism and drinking blood. And if you want to see what the scriptures say about that, just read Acts 15. And there are several other references throughout the book of Acts on that. If you really want to go in the Old Testament, you can do the same thing.
Right.
But I like to stick to the New Testament when it comes to this grossest form of paganism. J.K. Rowling is my third woman on the list, and she has sold 450 million copies of Harry Potter in 67 languages, mainstreaming witchcraft and homosexuality. It is by far the most popular book series of all time.
Wow.
She is at the top. You look at the Wikipedia list of the all-time best-selling book series, you're going to find J.K. Rowling at the very top. She is number one, and she has secured the number two position as to the highest box office receipts in history for a franchise.
Right, so another movie series again.
She stands at $2.5 billion. Friends, these are not small people. You understand? These are not small people. These are big people. These are giants. These are orders of magnitude larger than,
the Beatles.
Stephen Kendrick.
Yeah.
Stephen Kendrick.
Right.
Michael W. Smith.
Yeah.
Orders of magnitude above your average Christian author today.
Yeah.
Peretti. Somebody like that. They way. We're talking hundreds of times more powerful. Perhaps thousands of times more influential. J.K. Rowling, of course, has popularized witchcraft and homosexuality. Most recently, just a month ago, she finally came out of the closet. She had said Dumbledore was a homosexual.
Right.
She had said that in 2007, I believe, once she had accomplished 250 million copies of her book. But J.K. Rowling has finally admitted that there were LGBT students at Hogwarts. Came out in December and said that. And Dumbledore as well, which means she's doing her best to work towards the Greek form of the gymnasium and pedophilia.
Right.
That's where she's headed. You've got the teacher. Now you've got the students. It's homosexual fest. Harry Potter is a homosexual fest. She was successful at bringing homosexuality out of the closet for 13-year-old boys. And remember that... Yeah. That's very important.
Yeah.
You got to do that if you are working your way towards paganism and leading the massive Christian apostasy in the West. So Suzanne Collins is the fourth in the list, and she, of course, is the author of the Hunger Games trilogy that has sold 26 million copies in 26 languages, and she has popularized the pagan gladiatorial games, bringing them back, something that I think some of the Christian fathers hoped were gone forever, but they are back. It's interesting that J.K. Rowling is an Anglican, now I believe attending a Church of Scotland. Meyer is a Mormon. James, not sure, some think just a secularist, and Collins was a Catholic. For the most part, they come from Christian or Catholic backgrounds. But Erica, Stephanie, Joanne, and Suzanne will certainly go down into history as the great deconstructionists of the Western world. These four women have, in a singular manner, managed to popularize paganism and take it mainstream.
Yeah, and you know it's mainstream when they make them all into movies.
Yeah.
And the movies and
that's
do
happened.
Really well.
That's happened one by one. J.K. Rowling, number two. Box office receipts in the history of motion pictures. Suzanne Collins, Hunger Games. That's pretty much been the biggest film of 2014. And we have done our due critique of some of those movies as they've come out. Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series, same thing. And finally, this year, 50 Shades of Grey has managed to take the more nihilistic form of sexuality and taken it mainstream. All right, my friends, now I want you to contrast for a moment the 21st century with the 18th century.
So the 1700s.
So let's get back to the 1700s and let's think about, I just did this last night. I was saying, okay, now who were the greatest authors of all time in the 1700s writing on homosexuality, drinking blood, vampirism? The great writers. I mean, the most popular ones. And I know that the most popular writer in the Northeast, we're talking in New England, in the latter part of the 1600s, early part of the 1700s, was Increase Mather and his sermons.
Really?
Yeah, Increase Mather was the most well-known writer in America in the 1690s and the early 1700s. So think about it. We're talking about best sellers in the 1700s. Increase Mather, a very powerful Puritan preacher.
Increase that is Mather. Amazing.
Now, would you say there is a difference between Increase Mather and Stephanie Meyer?
Yeah.
It'd be a bit of a move.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a move. Jonathan Edwards, huge writer.
Yeah.
Very important. Probably the most well-known American author of the 1700s. Yeah, I would say bar none.
And
you're not going to find anybody more well-known in America than Jonathan Edwards.
And he seemed to spit out books and things really quickly.
Jonathan Edwards versus Erica James in 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. I think a little bit of a difference.
A bit of a difference. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're talking about bestsellers of the 1700s. John Fox, Fox's Book of Martyrs, John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. The two books owned by almost every American.
Yeah.
In the 1700s. John Fox's book. Now, John Fox's Book of Martyrs versus, let's say, Collins' Hunger Games and the gladiatorial games. Oh, wait a minute. It was Christians who were jumping into the games or tossed into the games, knowing their best to stop the games.
Right.
Even at the loss of their own lives.
Yeah.
That's what the Christians were busy doing.
Yeah, John Fox wrote about that.
Yep. So there's a slight difference between John Fox and Suzanne Collins.
I would say world's difference. I would say darkness and light, good and evil, Christian and pagan.
Woo!
Huge differences. Unbelievable differences. So, big sellers in the 1700s, fans, Jonathan Edwards, Increase Mather, John Milton, John Bunyan, John Fox, Philip Doddridge.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Doddridge is huge. If you don't know his name, he was huge in the 1700s. John, Daniel Defoe, and Robinson Crusoe. And yeah. Okay, all solid Christians, all Puritans. People were running out to buy their books. These were the books on their shelves. This was before cannibalism, witchcraft, pagan gladiatorial games, nihilist sexuality, homosexuality came into the Western world. That was before that happened.
Yeah.
But now here's the next question. How do you get from Jonathan Edwards and John Fox back into godless gymnasiums and pagan coliseums?
There's got to be some education
going
on.
You've got to go to the 1800s.
Yeah.
How do you get from the 1700s to the 21st century? How do you get there? You got to go through the
1800s.
Century,
yeah.
1800s. Yeah. So, and that is where I would like to present a book called Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. Be sure to get the book and get it for all your friends. Get it for anybody who's interested in pop culture. Anybody who's slightly interested in Suzanne Collins, Rowling, Meyer, James. Get the book Apostate for any Christian left who wants to know the story of how it happened. Right, friends. Turns out, the only way you can get there is by way of a massive philosophical and academic shift in the minds of men in the 1800s and 1900s. Now, if you want to name some authors that popularized an anti-Christian philosophy in the academy, the guys who inspired the turnaround, the guys behind the turnaround, before all hell broke loose on Western society, before that happened, who was pressing the gates open? The virtual giants, the extreme Nephilim of the 19th century include people like Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Marquis de Sade. Marquis de Sade, obviously the parent of E.L. James. Obvious. I made that point in the show last week. Marquis de Sade, huge philosopher in the area of sadism. Where the word sadism comes from. Jeremy Bentham, huge. You don't know who Jeremy Bentham was, writing the most edgy book of the latter part of the 1700s, early part of the 1800s. Jeremy Bentham is the father of modern sexuality and homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know something of this man. Emerson, Hawthorne, Mark Twain, all of them outstanding apostates in some of the most spectacular terms, influenced by demons. And I do believe that guys like Mark Twain, Karl Marx, and Friedrich Nietzsche were influenced by Satan himself.
Yeah, especially because, with some of the last stuff that Mark Twain wrote.
Yeah, he wrote the letters to the earth. And
right.
Letters penned from Satan to the archangels. And, you know, he's serious about it. Mm-hmm. He was serious about it. He wasn't kidding around. He was effectively talking about how important it would be to mainstream adultery. It was huge for him.
Yeah.
Now, he warned his daughter, don't you dare publish that book. It wasn't published till the 1960s. During the sexual revolution, at the point at which people could accept it. But Mark Twain is very much, very important, why? The most influential American author ever, at least upon the last 200 years. Jonathan Edwards was the most influential author in the 1700s. But by the time you get to the 1800s, 1900s, the most popular author of all time, according to American schools, high schools, and colleges, was Mark Twain. Okay, I talk about the incredible influence of these powerful men that did their best to turn the tide on the Western world. Friends, read the story in this book, Apostate. Well, today we have new apostates, very powerful women who are being used to mainstream the ideas. But the men who are used to create the apostasy at the highest levels of academy, philosophy, leadership, et cetera, were covered in my book, Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. There should be mockers in the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is no surprise, Steve. I would take the term last times. I know there's a lot of debate on eschatology. But I think that we all should agree that the last times, at the very least, apply to the times at which Jude wrote all the way to the end of the world.
Right.
I think it's fair to say that much. Whether or not it specifically applies, especially to right now, I'm not saying that much. But I say if Jude wrote it, if it's in the Word of God, then we can apply it. And Jude spends the entire book, except for the last 4 to 5 verses, on this issue. Effectively, I should put the book of Jude in the appendix of my book Apostate. Because listen, there should be mockers in the last time who should walk after their own ungodly lusts. And they be they who separate themselves, sensual, having not the Spirit. But you, beloved, build up yourselves on your most holy faith, praying in the Holy Ghost. Keep yourselves in the love of God. Some have compassions. Others save with fear, pulling, yanking them out of the fire. I think that's what we do on the show. We have compassion, we're tender, and then sometimes we use the shock treatment, the paddle treatment. We got to do that in the midst of an apostate age. And that's what I'm trying to do with my book. The story of these apostates, their impact upon the world, is clearly staggering, friends. But they rage like waves of the sea. They're living out their own shame, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. That is, they burn out quickly. And that's the story of these apostates. That's how I end the book as well. Get my book Apostate at our website, kevinswanson.com, and be sure to get copies of any young person who's working their way into the mass culture or working their way into the academy, the university. If they're involved in any liberal arts classes, be sure to get them a copy of my book Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian Voice, available at our website, kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.